The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the Seahawkers Podcast with Brandon Schultz and Adam Emmert. And joining us today on the podcast, we've had him once before, just a few weeks ago, Rob Staton from SeahawksDraftBlog.com. And he's back to talk a little bit of NFL draft with us. How's it going, Rob?
I'm not bad. Thanks, guys, for having me on again.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for coming back on. We had a lot of great feedback from your last visit on, so I wanted to bring you back and talk plenty of draft, especially with not a whole lot of news from now coming up to the draft.
Yeah, it's a quiet time. Hopefully it's going to pick up a little bit as we get closer, but I can't believe we're still over a month away, so hopefully this time is going to pass as quickly as the time since the Super Bowl.
It can't get here fast enough. Now, last time we were on, we talked a lot about wide receivers the Seahawks might go for in the first round or in the second round, early in the draft, because I think, as most Seahawks fans see it, that was probably the team's biggest need. And in the time since we've talked last, they went out and addressed their biggest need, giving up their first-round draft pick for Jimmy Graham, tight end from New Orleans.
Yeah, I think this puts a lot of attention now on the offensive line in the draft. The two biggest needs, I think it's fair to say, are guard and center. It makes it very likely, although certainly not a certainty, that they go with a guard, I think, at number 63. They need to fill those two holes as a priority now. I still think they will look at receivers in the draft. And Jimmy Graham was getting a guy like that was the biggest need. I think they would have loved to have got Julius Thomas when he chose to go to Florida instead. They had to come up with an alternative, and it's great that this trade, they were able to get it done because Graham's a better player than Thomas. Huge impact player, exactly what they needed on offense. I think if they can't get this trade done, they're probably looking at a receiver or trying to force a receiver at number 31. And they certainly would have gone in that direction and picked the guy who was top of their board in that situation. So now they don't have to go down that road. They've got Graham, who's a better player than anybody they could have got at the end of the first round. And now they can focus on that offensive line, probably in rounds two, and then going into three and four.
Now, Graham's certainly a better option than Julius Thomas, but they do have to give up something to get him. They give up Max Unger. So, like you said, it leaves two big positions to fill, the one at center and then with the departure of James Carpenter, the one at guard. Now, it sounds to me like from your recent blogs that you do like the Seahawks to take a guard with that second-round pick. And which guard in particular are you most leaning toward?
I think there's a really good chance that they're going to like Tyson Brailoe at Colorado State. They seem to like tackles who can convert inside, or at least players who can play multiple positions on the offensive line. He played tackle at Colorado State and would probably play guard for Seattle. He's not the complete product, but he's very coachable. I think that's something that has appealed to Tom Cable. I think he likes guys who are not the finished article, that, you know, he can work in towards Seattle's scheme. He has a personality which is very similar to John Moffitt. People may have different opinions on whether that's a good thing or not. But he's that kind of personable guy who you can root for. I think the fans are going to like him. The reason I think he fits really well with Seattle is that they tend to love size, for the power running game involving Marshawn Lynch. We've seen them draft, you know, big hulking offensive linemen in the past with Justin Britt, and James Carpenter. You know, Sweezy's not a small guy, neither was Max Unger. So they like size, but they also like mobility for the zone blocking scheme. And Brailo ticks both of those boxes. Really mobile, good footwork, loves to get to the second level. I think there's a lot more to come from him at the next level with a bit of extra coaching. I spoke to Tony Pauline last week, and he said that he would be great value in the second round. Doesn't think he's going to last into the third. So if the Seahawks want to get at him, they're probably looking at number 63, which is their first pick in the draft. That may be their only chance to get a shot at him. I think he would be a one starter at guard for Seattle.
Now, one other guy that you've blogged about just here in the last week is Stefan Wisniewski, and he's a center coming from Oakland, free agent, and the Seahawks brought him in. Now, we haven't heard a lot of news since that visit went down, and it doesn't even sound like there's been a whole lot of news of him visiting with other teams at this point. Now, I liked your recent blog and the thoughts why we haven't necessarily heard from him right away. Explain some of your thoughts around Wisniewski.
Well, one of the big storylines in free agency was that Oakland signed Rodney Hudson, another center from Kansas City, and gave him a contract worth nearly $9 million a year, which is the kind of money that Julius Thomas is getting in Jacksonville, which is incredible money for a center. And Wisniewski's probably thinking, well, I don't expect to get that much because it's incredible money for a center. But if he's getting nearly $9 million a year, then maybe I should expect to get $5 or $7 million a year. And what we found after Hudson was signed is that the market just went really cold. And it wasn't just for the interior offensive lineman, Mikey Putty aside. We saw the same issue with the defensive lineman as well. And his market has just gone pretty cold. Now, I think there's probably several teams, not just Seattle, there's one or two others as well that would be interested in bringing him in. But they're probably saying, we're not going to give you $5 or $7 million. We're probably going to want to give you the average salary for a starting center, which is $3 or $4 million. Now, for him, he's probably thinking, well, if I bide a bit of time here, teams tend to have an idea of the guys they're able to get, even in the middle rounds, even in sort of rounds 3 to 5, they will know who's going to be available to them. And maybe teams like Seattle will say, do you know what? You know, there's a couple of players who we thought we were going to be able to get, we're not going to be able to get now. So we'll maybe go back to Wisniewski and say, look, okay, we're willing to give you a little bit more money, and maybe that pays off for him. Alternatively, you may have a situation where teams will just wait until the end of the draft and then see where they're at, and then maybe that value will be there for Wisniewski. Of course, the alternative is that none of this happens, that his market's not going to recover, and that he's just going to have to accept a salary of $3 or $4 million, potentially on a 1 or 2 year contract to make it short term so that he can hit free agency again. And maybe that's the reality of his situation now in free agency. Perhaps he overestimated what his market's going to be. He's going to wait it out a little bit. And whether he signs for the Seahawks or somebody else, he's probably not going to get as much money as he expected.
And there's a few other options kind of along the offensive line. Now, you mentioned your interview with Tony Pauline. And if Wisniewski doesn't, if he's not willing to accept a lower amount of money, which it seems like the Seahawks, they aren't in the practice of overpaying for any player in particular. What are some of those other guys in the draft? Like, I know one of the guys you talked to Tony about was Ali Marpet. And he's out of Hobart, which, I mean, even for people in the U.S., I don't think they've heard of Hobart unless they went to school there or live next to wherever it is. I couldn't even tell you what state Hobart is in. But now he showed up pretty big in the Senior Bowl and showed that he can compete, even though he is from a small school, that he can compete with some of the talent from SEC-type schools. Do you see him as a guy who would potentially be available in the early to mid-rounds?
Yeah, absolutely. He's someone who should really appeal to not just the Seahawks, but a lot of different teams. You know, incredibly athletic center. He turned up at the Senior Bowl and he was a left tackle at Hobart. And he just looked at his frame and he just had an ideal frame to play center in the NFL. I mean, just perfectly built to play that position. Did ever so well in the game coming up against the likes of Danny Shelton, Carl Davis at Iowa. And just had a really good week. You can actually go back and watch the workouts on the PhiladelphiaEagles.com website and some other websites as well. He's probably on YouTube by now too. And you could see him doing well in the drills and showing progression and developing each day. And he's just a really exciting talent. And when you actually find some more information about him, and you actually learn more and more stuff. He's a really interesting guy. Now, he's a guy that fans are going to love because he's a very engaging personality, very well-spoken, but still plays with that grit of an offensive lineman. He's the type of guy that you want to go and have a beer with, and fans love offensive linemen like that. He's a very, very interesting prospect. Teams may be a little frightened off by the level of competition. He's not played top-level college football. And for that reason, maybe he will fall a bit. There are some teams who say, do you know what? I'm not going to take small school guys until the third day, for example. I won't take a guy like that until the fourth round. Now, if the NFL has that impression on Ali Marpet, then maybe he's not going to go quite as high as some people expect. But his momentum is just trending upwards. I mean, he is the most athletic offensive lineman in this draft class. And for that reason, I think he is going to go early. He's not the only really intriguing center prospect. There are tons of options for Seattle in the middle rounds. It doesn't have to be Ali Marpet, Stefan Wisniewski. There's a lot of options there. I think if they do have to turn to the draft to find a starting center, they will get one. And even if it's a guy who's having to convert from tackle, there are plenty of options there too. It's a really good draft for offensive.
Yeah, I'd encourage anybody, if they haven't seen any video of Ali Marpet, just to go out and hear a little bit of his story, because he's one of those guys where you hear his story and you hear him talk about just going through the process of getting ready for Senior Bowl. It was that interview, I think, that really got him on my radar, and hearing how he took that challenge and really, took him a little bit to get up to feeling that type of competition. But once he did, he showed that improvement just in that short amount of time. Now, I do want to talk a little bit, because the Jimmy Graham trade also has not only the impact on the offensive line, it impacts how they draft receiver and potentially if they would have gone tight end in the draft. So how do you see that impacting the receiver position? Do you see them going after more players in the draft, or do you think that they are settled at this point?
I think they would have to look at receivers in this draft just because of the sheer quality of players that are available. Look at it in two ways. First of all, they could probably do with another bigger receiver still, despite the emergence of Matthews in the Super Bowl, despite the addition of Jimmy Graham. I think they need someone they can develop. Darren Waller's measurables from Georgia Tech are identical to Vincent Jackson. I mean, he's just a clone of Vincent Jackson when they both were at the combine in their respective years. And it took Jackson 4 years to become a solid NFL receiver at San Diego. And then obviously when it clicked for him, Jimmy Graham is going to be 29 this year. So I'd like to see a guy drafted like Waller who can be stashed to develop, you know, in the later rounds, probably, maybe on day three, someone that they can settle on and work on over a period of time, so that maybe when Jimmy Graham is even moving on, I mean, his contract is for, I think, another 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. He eventually is going to move on. Someone that can maybe take over as that bigger receiver when he departs. But the problem is Waller a special teams guy? You know, how is he going to contribute on the roster to justify his place? Because we've seen, you know, they were deactivating Kevin Norwood last year because he wasn't as good on special team as Matthews. Mm. So I don't know if there's going to be a place for someone like Waller. The other key thing is they've got to want a kick returner, because the kick returns last year was really unproductive. You know, they had Brian Walters as the fair catch specialist, essentially. Uh-huh. Now he's moved on to Jacksonville, and you know, the next receiver who comes in, yeah, you want him to contribute during the offense during their first year, but essentially you want them to be a great kick returner as well. There's lots of good options here. I think that Tyler Lockett is a great one for Seattle, just really competitive, knows how to get open. He's a smaller guy, but he's got a lot of power in his legs. High points the ball, he's gritty, he's got great character. He can be a week one starter as the punt returner and the kick returner while he learns the offense. Maybe comes along over the year like Paul Richardson did last year. And I think he's probably going to be a round two pick. So you may even have a situation where you're deciding between, do you take the guard like Sam Brailo? Do you take someone like Lockett who's going to be a kick returner? And then you have to balance it out with the options you're going to have in rounds three and four, those respective positions. But it's not just down to Lockett. If they take a guard in round two, they could look at someone like Trey McBride, who's another big playmaker, but has got kick return ability. Nelson Aguilar is an option from USC, similar size to Paul Richardson, really athletic. You've got Chris Harper at California, who didn't go to the combine. He could be a really good option, and he's visiting Seattle, so he's someone to keep an eye on. And then there's West Virginia's Mario Alford as well, who had an exceptional year. While a lot of people are talking about Kevin White at West Virginia, it was Alford in the second half of the season. It was basically their main threat. As teams zoned in on White, Alford really came to the fore. So he's someone to keep an eye as well.
Before you go, I do want to talk a little bit of defense. We've been pretty focused on offense. The Seahawks announced just this last week that they signed Atiba Rubin, defensive tackle from the Browns. And I think when we looked at positions in need on the defense, last time we talked about corner, they addressed that through free agency. And now I feel like defensive line is probably where they would focus in the draft. Now, do you see the signing of Rubin having any impact on guys they might go after along the defensive line in the draft?
I think it does have an impact, because the big thing is that you're adding to the depth you've got on the defensive line. A year ago, Seahawks lost Red Bryant, Chris Clemons, Clinton McDonald, and they really had to bring guys in to replenish that depth. So all of a sudden you're looking at a guy like Cassius Marsh and saying, well, he better contribute this year. You're looking at Benson Maioa and saying, can he be the guy who steps up? And then you end up relying on guys like O'Brien Schofield, for example, and some of the other depth in there. You know, you're relying on a Jordan Hill, who actually did really well, but at the start of the year, you're hoping more than expecting production from him. So now what they're doing is they've kept the line together. They're just adding depth there, which is something they needed to do. So Rubin comes in. I don't think he necessarily replaces Brandon Mebane, but it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with Mebane. Are they going to use his signing to maybe put a bit of pressure on him and say, we want you to renegotiate your contract, maybe extend it for another year, like we saw with Zach Miller. So it lowers his cap hit in 2015, and then they have the option in a year's time on whether or not they want to move on. The same situation with Miller. I could definitely see something like that, but I also think that they'll want to keep hold of Mebane, because he is a really productive player. He's one of two players left on the roster who have lasted through the previous regime and have stayed with Carroll and John Schneider, the other being John Ryan. So it's a select group of two guys, which shows that, you know, they do like him. They gave him his second contract in Seattle in 2011. So they'll want to keep him around. They won't want to lose him and weaken the depth that they've got on the defensive line. But I think the Rubin signing's good, because he just backs him up. Worst case scenario is Mebane gets injured, for example. Rubin steps up to the plate. Best case scenario is those two guys are rotating. They're keeping each other fresh. And that's how Seattle dominated in 2013.
Rob Staton, I really want to thank you for coming back on the show. Folks can follow you on Twitter at Rob Staton, S-T-A-T-O-N. And, of course, SeahawksDraftBlog.com. Thanks again, Rob.
Thanks a lot, guys.
The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen ed provided by Strayer University affiliates of Fuel Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.